Well, it's 10:15, so I'm going to start because 20 minutes is not very long. And I'm told that people will kind of wander in and out over the course of the three sessions. So we'll just get going. So, welcome. Glad to see you. Glad to be doing something other than standing behind the book table. But I've really enjoyed being out there, too. So I'm Sharon Carlson, and I'm here with the ASA staff. I'm not actually on staff with ASA, but I've been working with them for about a year and a half now as a consultant. And I have my own education consulting business where I work with students primarily who are in the college search process, and also have done some tutoring for executive functioning and organizational skills, done some career counseling with adults. But I've got a long history with college students and high school students. And one of the things that I'm very, very passionate about and have done a lot of work and study on is mentoring. I got my master's in pastoral counseling from Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary back in 1993. And I did my master's project on faith development and mentoring with college students. And so a lot of what kind of formed in my thinking around mentoring and students and their development started with my studies in seminary. So this is something that I've been talking about for a long time, and I've done it in a number of different contexts with faculty members and college students. I've done it with seminary wives and church people, and so I'm really excited to be here and able to share it with you in this context. So we'll be talking about mentoring, and mentoring really is a buzzword in our culture. Everyone talks about mentoring. You see public service announcements on TV about mentoring, and everybody wants to be a part of this phenomenon. But really, nobody really can give you a concrete definition of what mentoring is. And so what I've found very helpful is thinking about mentoring in terms of a framework. And so in this first section of the symposium, we're going to be talking about what is a helpful framework for understanding mentoring. So just throw some words out. When you think of mentoring, what are some of the things that come to your mind? Complete this sentence. A mentor is someone who
listens.
Encourages.
Advises.
Challenges.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between people and coaching, or is that the same thing?
We'll find out. So, yes. And if you talk to a dozen people, you will get 14 different definitions of mentoring. Everyone has their own concept of what it is and how it functions. But basically, I think of mentoring involving certain things. And that's sort of the big picture of what mentoring is. And then we're going to talk about more specifically what mentoring does and how it functions. But I've heard mentoring described this way. Mentoring is a brain to pick, an ear to listen, and a push in the right direction. I've also heard it a brain to pick, a shoulder to cry on, and a kick in the pants. So that's an interesting kind of general way of thinking about it. But I think mentoring involves several things. The first thing it involves is influence. I think of leadership as influence. And we all have a sphere of influence. So, you know, some people may say, well, only certain people are, you know, gifted to be leaders. Only certain people are gifted to be mentors. I think everyone has the potential to be a mentor because everyone has a sphere of influence. And for you to determine what your strengths and expertise and ability is in terms of those you influence, that's a key to figuring out how you are equipped to be a mentor. And I don't see a lot of students here, but when a student is thinking about who could be their mentor, that's an important thing to think about as well. Mentoring also involves identity. And especially if we're working with young people, they're in this stage of their personal development where they're figuring out their identity. Some of them are in an identity crisis, like our little cow here, thinks he might be a cat. But they're all in the process. And one of the authors I did a lot of reading when I did my thesis was Sharon Parks. And she actually posits and identified in developmental psychology a stage of life. So we have childhood, adolescence, adulthood. She posited a new stage called young adulthood, in between adolescence and adulthood in the developmental process. And she says that in order for a young person to successfully navigate life and maturity from adolescence into adulthood requires mentoring through that stage of young adulthood. So identity is a big part of the impact that a mentor can have. Mentoring also involves potential. And I had a student once when I used to work at Gordon College I worked in a leadership development scholarship program where we were working with students who were identified as having leadership potential. And they were in this program all 4 years. And I had a student who was a senior about to graduate in my office, and he had served as the vice president of the student body in the Student Government Association. He had multiple leadership positions on campus, was well-known, well-liked by his peers and his professors. And he sat in my office about a month before graduation, and he sort of hung his head, and he said, "I'm so disappointed in my experience." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because I came in as a freshman and I knew I had all this potential and I expected my professors to see it in me and pull it out of me, and that hasn't happened." And he understood himself to have potential, but he chose a very passive posture in his college experience, and it broke my heart because I thought if he only understood how to get that kind of mentoring that he really wanted, but he was just sitting there waiting for it to happen to him. And that sort of fueled my fire even more to be talking about students. And I actually, partially because of that conversation, decided to leave Gordon College where I worked and become the dean of students at a private Christian high school. And they were starting, it was a pre-K through 8 school who were starting a high school. And I had the opportunity to go start a high school program at a Christian school. And the deciding factor for me in doing that was that I could create better college students by speaking into their lives in high school. So this is a big part of what mentoring is, and I want students to understand that they're as much a part of this as their professors are. So this concept has really defined my thinking in many ways. It started when my children were young. I have a 22 and a 20-year-old now, but when they were very young, I attended a Sunday school class at our church, and it was a video series done by a man named Ted Tripp, who you may have heard of, Shepherding a Child's Heart. And he told a story of when he was young. He lived on a farm, and he had an apple tree in his yard, and his apple tree, he loved his apple tree. And he just took care of it. He sat under it. He climbed it. He loved his apple tree, but it produced the nastiest apples you could see. They were terrible. They tasted awful. And that was the only thing that he was unhappy about. His neighbor also had an apple tree who grew beautiful apples, beautiful, juicy, big apples. So he decided one day that he would go over to his neighbor's house and he would take some of the apples off of his neighbor's apple tree and get some string, and he tied them onto his apple tree because he wanted his apple tree to have beautiful apples on it. So he did that, and it worked for a little while. The apples looked beautiful tied to his tree. But what happened after a few days, of course, they rotted and they fell off, and his tree was back to having nasty apples on it. And the idea, as it related to parenting, was that we often tie the apples on the tree of our children. think of if you have children or you've seen children, you've probably heard someone say to a child, say you're sorry. And what does the child do? Sorry, you know, and it's clear they're not really sorry. So the idea is that we want to be developing things in our children that are coming out naturally out of who they are, out of the heart. And this concept has extended to all of my work with students, because I often see parents trying to tie apples on their students as far as you should be a teacher, you should be a doctor, you should do this or that. Or we often tie apples to ourselves. I should be this, I should be that. And if you're a faculty member, you may find your students tying apples on you that shouldn't be there. And so the idea is that for ourselves as mentors, but also for our students, we need to be cultivating in them what is naturally going to grow out of them and not be trying to tie something onto them that isn't part of who they're naturally designed to be. I talk about this all the time with my high school students who are trying to figure out what to study when they go to college. My mom told me I should be a teacher. Well, what's inside of you? What should you do? So this is a concept that has been very defining for me, and I just throw it out there because hopefully it will help you frame a little bit of your work with students. So this framework for mentoring that has developed for me over time is based on a book by Robert Clinton, who's out of Fuller Seminary, called Connecting. And this term constellation model is his. It's not something I came up with, but it's very appropriate for ASA. This constellation model of mentoring. And basically, it takes the practice of mentoring in someone's life and gives it different directions, so to speak. So for the sake of this illustration, you can, for the next 15 minutes or so, consider yourself the center of the universe, okay? So there you are in the middle. And for each of us, even those of us who function as mentors for our students and younger people, we still need this type of constellation around us as well. So all of us need this upward direction of mentoring. So those who have gone before us, who are able to speak into our lives, shape us, guide us, direct us, All of us need that kind of input. And then we also have the downward focus of mentoring, which my guess is all of us in this room are engaged in that. So think Barnabas, Paul, Timothy. Paul is the one in the middle. He's been mentored by Barnabas. He turns around and he mentors Timothy. And then Timothy becomes someone else's upward mentor, and so on. So we all need that upward and that downward focus. But what we don't often think about are these horizontal levels. So one thing when you talk about mentoring, and I ask people a mentor is, often people say friends or peers. And there is a lot to say about the ability of peers to mentor one another. In fact, this internal peer mentoring has been happening the last few days here. We are all, so to speak, in the same boat as Christians in science, and an opportunity to interact with other people who understand your context and who kind of know where you're coming from and some of the things you're dealing with can be extremely beneficial and encouraging. And in that way, it's a mentoring type of relationship. There's also an external peer component. So that's even been happening here. So you have people who are geologists who are talking to physicists, and you have mathematicians talking to physicians, and the people who are still your peers, but in a sense are external to your most immediate context. And the value in that is that when you're with people who are in the same boat and you're all dealing with the same issue, you often can't see beyond yourself for a solution. And so to have someone who's not in that same immediate context with you look in, so the image here is binocular, sort of looking in over the fence, can be extremely valuable to have someone say, well, what about this? Or haven't you thought of doing it this way? So that you can get a respected kind of external perspective that might just switch something for you, and you'll see something that you didn't see before. So here's one of my favorite mentors, Jean-Luc Picard, and I've talked about this example for a very long time from the Star Trek series, and I think his character embodies a lot of what we typically value when we think of someone who is a mentor. And in the second part of this presentation, I'll be talking a little more about the various functions of mentoring. So now we have this framework of the upward, the downward, and the peer horizontal levels of mentoring. And those are the types of relationships we need to have. But how do those actually work? What do they look like day to day? And that's what we'll be talking about next in the next half hour. But I want to give you an example, and I'm actually going to show you a short video clip from one of these episodes. When we think about someone who's a mentor, there's someone who cares about us. They obviously wouldn't invest anything in our lives if they didn't care about what happened to us, or care, even if it is in a generic way, a professor with a classroom full of students. The professor cares about the learning of their students, even if it's not a one-on-one relationship. There is a caring element there. There's a support element. You want to feel supported by your mentor, even if it's in less tangible ways. You know they're praying for you, or you know they are going to send you a resource when they come across it they think will be helpful. Those kinds of support is sort of expected when you think about how somebody functions as a mentor. A mentor needs to tell the truth. You're not doing anyone you're mentoring a favor if you're not straight with them, because how else will they learn? And if they're learning from a mistake, or they're learning from just immaturity and the process of learning, I have a little picture on my office wall that's a small fishbowl and a big fishbowl and a goldfish kind of midair, and it says, "All growth begins at the end of your comfort zone." And so we want to be truthful to our students and tell them, you know, when they're at a point, maybe when they need to leap out of their comfort zone, or when they've made a poor choice or on the wrong track, they need to be truthful. We need to allow those we mentor to experience the consequences they've earned. And this is true, this has been true for me as a parent as well. It's not helpful to anyone if they've made a poor choice and there's a consequence for them to be, what's the right word?
Shielded,
yes, from that. Because that's how we grow, and those consequences are often what puts us out of our comfort zone. But think of your own experience and the lessons you've learned from the difficult things you've been through, and sometimes those have been of your own doing. And there are consequences that you earned. So, and then expecting things, that whole idea of potential. To say to someone, I know you can do this. I heard yesterday in the panel, if you were here, Faith Tucker talked about a high school teacher who she wanted to get out of math and physics because she thought it was too hard. And she had a teacher who said, no, this is something you can do. And she did, and here she is. So I want to just show you a brief, a brief clip, and I'll set some context for this. Hopefully it'll come up. It's going to wake up. So let me set some context. So this is an episode of Star Trek Next Generation, and if you're familiar with the characters, Wesley Crusher, who's the young man who's an ensign, he's away at the academy, you know, at college, the equivalent, and he's been part of a group of students who decided they were going to do this, you know, big exciting thing, that this maneuver that was actually illegal at their graduation. And so they practiced it. They thought they, you know, were invincible. They did it, and there was a horrible accident, and one of the students was killed. So there was an inquest and all of this, and they all lied and said they didn't know what had happened, and they blamed it on the student who died. And so they've come to the point where they sort of got to an impasse, and Wesley, in the end, stood up and told the truth. And so he went against all his friends who had kind of in collusion said, we were going to lie about this. He stood up, he told the truth, and now here's the fallout. So you'll see this final conversation between him and his mentor.
Mr. Locarno has been expelled.
They should have expelled all of us.
They very nearly did. Mr. Locarno made an impassioned plea for the rest of you. He said that he used his influence as squadron leader to convince you to attempt the call void maneuver, and then to cover up the truth. He asked to take full responsibility.
He did exactly what he said he would. He protected the team. I feel awful. I've let down everyone. My mother, my friends, you.
You should feel bad. And you will pay for what you've done. Admiral Brand has decided that, in addition to a formal reprimand, your academic credits for the past year will be canceled and you will not advance with your class.
I understand.
It's not going to be easy. Staying here on campus, everyone knowing what you did. You have difficult times ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Captain.
You knew what you had to do. I just made sure that you listened to yourself. Goodbye, Cadet.
Goodbye, Captain.
Best line in all of Star Trek. You knew what you needed to do. I just made sure you listened to yourself. And, you know, he said, you should feel bad. Because he should. So that's the idea of telling the truth and allowing those earned consequences. And, you know, he, in all likelihood, given who he was and his status, could have shielded Wesley from those consequences, pulled some strings. But just obviously a very fictional, but I think a very compelling example of this type of mentoring. So I think we made our first section. Thoughts, questions, this whole idea of this constellation and this framework. What's your experience been of these types of mentoring relationships and with your students or even for yourself? Yeah.
You know, I think that we have to go beyond caring, because mm-hmm. caring needs to look a certain way when you're mentoring. Mm-hmm. And so listening to the other person deeply, recognizing their mm-hmm. own individual worth when other people are... You don't usually listen so deeply to someone who's younger, perhaps, mm-hmm. And to recognize them as a full individual mm-hmm. so that they then can feel in a place where, first off, they can experiment. Mm-hmm. They do feel like they have this support. So it's a way of listening and a way of seeing the other person mm-hmm. that you're mentoring mm-hmm. that I think opens up the possibility for them to know what to do and listen to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And so I think that it would be useful, you know, to define what this caring looks like. Mm-hmm. What does exactly a good mentor do?
Yep. That is exactly what we're going to talk about in our next segment. So thank you for that. Yes.
I've been to their mentoring talks, you know, for the constellation model, but it was given a little differently than this one. It was given as all mentees need a constellation of mentors. Mm-hmm. So you need a mentor in this area, a mentor in that area, and together all those mentors fill out a picture, which will become you.
Yes.
So again, it's all focused on you, not going down.
Right.
All up.
Right.
So
yeah.
But lots of us.
Yes, there, and there is an element of that that we'll see in the next segment. And when yesterday in the panel, one of the things that came out repeatedly was, were any of you here at the panel yesterday? There were four members of ASA who talked about their various experiences of mentoring. And one of the things that came out over and over was this idea of you can't really have an uber mentor, you know, someone who does all of those things for you. And the, I'll show you the title of my next segment is Breaking Through the Yoda Complex, is that idea that we've got to find that one guru of our lives who will meet every need we have. So there is an element of needing to have a variety of people who fill the mentoring roles in our lives. But to me, that constellation is about not only what you receive, but also what you're giving. So, yeah.
You mentioned something about seeing beyond natural design, seeing the natural design when you talked about the potential of the young man that felt like the instructor should bring out his potential.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a question, especially working with people that are, you're trying to move out of their environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their natural tendency is to see themselves as where they exist. And so have you had any experiences moving people out from an environment they're already in? And when I say environment, I'm probably using the wrong word.
More like where they're comfortable,
yeah,
and not necessarily seeing the need to grow?
Well, they have a desire, like, you know, work with a lot of people in poverty that do not, that come from uneducated homes, that maybe have a desire for more, but how to bring that out so that they see a better potential in themselves, you know, because if you go with the natural, they're gonna stay closer to where they're at when they
right.
can be further.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wondered if you had any experience in that or maybe something that you could share.
Well, I think that's in the type of mentoring that you do with that individual, because it's about identifying their need. So in that case, their need would be to be able to have a perspective bigger than their current circumstances. And so thinking about how you do that is the practical way that you mentor them. So you're not going to just sort of throw information at that person, but you're going to try to give them experiences that are different than what they would naturally have, or just in an encouraging way, speak into their awareness of themselves, something they're maybe not hearing anywhere else. So I think that's the function of the type of mentoring that you would do with that person that might look different than what you would do with someone else. And we'll talk about that a little more, too. So I want to give you a minute to stretch, and we may have some people who want to come and go, and feel free to do that. Yeah?
You know, I was thinking, you know, the model, I like that constellation model. Sorry, I'm just turning on my machine. It has to see me. It frees you up in some ways, instead of seeing this as some sort of linear or horizontal, some straight line. I like that. And in particular, I was going to say that the upward modeling is really important. Years ago, I came to the fact that I was always going to have successive mentors, and so I started deliberately. It's something that the mentee needs to do, and the mentor, you need to deliberately seek these people out and recognize when they come in your life. And so
right.
Martin's not here, so I can tell this story. Martin Price for a short period of time, was executive director and I was the academic dean under him. And in just that critical time was so important. There were some key lessons that came in from his life experience. And you think, yeah, you get in your mid-60s and you know, you pretty well have run the race here. And, you know, there's more to go. And there are many more people around who can help you do that. And I was really sharpened. In fact, because he...
Hi.
In that particular experience, he called me on something I was doing.
Mm.
So I was looking at a situation and I was imputing motive to another person who says, well, I really can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Man, boom. And I went, whoa, that is such a helpful idea. And in working with people,
mm-hmm.
and you'd think you'd learn that lesson early, but here it came.
Right.
So that worked. That worked.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes. And I love field trips in some of your talks, but you know, teaching college, one of the things I find is that there are so many students who really want that mentoring, but to really deeply mentor someone, I can only do two or three students,
mm-hmm.
maybe a couple more at a time. And so
mm-hmm.
I sometimes feel like I have to choose, like, who can I
mm-hmm.
really help mentor? And so sometimes that for me is a really difficult choice in trying to
yeah.
figure out how to take that little amount of energy and time I have to mentor and how to best use it.
Right.
With the number of students who really want it and need it.
Right. Yeah, and that's about finding fit too. I mean, you may have a student come to you looking for a mentor, but part of what you need to do in order to best serve that student is to determine if you're the right person to mentor them. And sometimes maybe you're not. And it doesn't mean that you couldn't, but maybe sometimes you shouldn't. And we are going to talk about that too. Yes?
Would levels of mentoring be useful? And yesterday this was also brought up.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
A little bit is okay?
Yep. Yeah, we're going to talk about that now. So why don't we, is everyone okay to just keep
sure,
moving along?
Sure.
All right. So here in the second segment, yesterday it was brought up that, you know, as I just mentioned, oftentimes when you think of mentoring, you think of someone who needs to be kind of the guru of your life, who will know you better than anyone else and be able to speak into every aspect of your life. And for people who are busy, faculty members, even, you know, people like Randy Isaac, who was at IBM, people are busy. You only have a certain amount of energy and time to do that. So how do you navigate that? And what might it look like for you to mentor in a way that is most effective? So just a quick little bit of history. The origins of mentoring come from Homer's Odyssey. And mentor was a character in the Odyssey who was Telemachus, who was Odysseus' son. And while Odysseus was off fighting his fights, Telemachus was put in the care of mentor. And so he became a teacher, coach, counselor, protector, basically a foster parent, so to speak, who guided and led Telemachus through his life experiences. And when you think of this type of mentoring, today it becomes synonymous with that idea of this overarching person. And, you know, someone, you may have mentees who come to you thinking you're going to sort of adopt them. You know, they're off at college or they're in grad school, they're away from home, they need that parental figure. And they may have an understanding of mentoring that will expect that of you. And that, I've known faculty members who that completely freaks out. And they think, I can't do mentoring because I can't be that for anyone. But that's where that idea comes from. This evolved into the idea of apprenticeship that was connected with the craft guilds where younger people were being apprenticed into the skills of a certain trade. And it went beyond just training for that craft. It went into the standards of the craft and upholding the integrity of it. And then also maintaining, making sure there was an adequate number of tradesmen in that craft to meet the needs of their community. And then that evolved into academia. And the earliest models of academia were very much an apprentice model where students actually lived with their professors. It was not just the content of the academic subject that was being taught, but it was also life skills and personal development. It was a parallel kind of life experience together where the student was really learning from the master. But this became very impractical when the educational system kind of exploded and these huge universities began and faculty, you couldn't have 30 students living with you in a way that was effective. We have residence life models now where there is an element of that. I was a resident director for 9 years, and so I lived in a residence hall with my students. But I wasn't teaching them English and physics and, you know, the subjects that they were there to learn. So that apprentice model of academia kind of broke down to where we are now, where students are looking for mentoring, but faculty aren't often really aware or comfortable with how that should look. So this idea of the Uber mentor, the Yoda, however you want to think about it, really isn't practical in most cases. And that's not to say that there aren't relationships that develop into that. And many of you can probably think of people that mentored you who have become kind of that person you go to when you're dealing with something, or who have spoken into your life in many different ways. But for the general student who shows up on a college campus, like the young man I mentioned earlier, who passively sat there waiting for someone to pull all this potential out of him, they need to understand that that isn't what they should be looking for. And for those of you who are mentoring students, you shouldn't be trying to be this for anyone, because you'll just wear yourself out. So what should it look like? So this also comes out of Clinton's constellation model, which I can flip back to for those of you who weren't here earlier. But there are three types, and this is the practical aspect of how that constellation model, which I think of sort of as the bones of the framework, this is the meat on the bones, and that this is actually how it happens. So there may be some in mentoring relationships that necessarily are more intense, and there are these different intensive types of mentoring. They're very goal-oriented. Not that other types aren't, but we'll talk about that in a minute. They're about developing potential over time. They require initiative, either on the part of the student or the mentor. Very intentional, and typically happen over a longer period of time. So some examples would be a discipler. So if you have someone who's new in the faith, they connect with someone who's an older believer, and that person kind of walks alongside them as they grow in their faith. They teach them, what does it mean to study scripture? How do you pray? How do you share your faith? What are those disciplines that are important for the Christian life? And those need time to develop. So a spiritual guide would be someone who's older, who's dealing with some sort of spiritual issue or crisis, who connects with someone else to help walk through that with them. A coach is the most kind of typical. You asked about coaching. Coaching would be an intensive type of mentoring relationship. My son played varsity soccer at Gordon College. He just graduated in May, and his coach was a very significant relationship for him over the past 4 years. 4 years, and that's not a quick thing. But he went through a lot, and he learned a lot, and it wasn't just about the skills of soccer, but it was about life. And so there is that intensive, what we typically think about as mentoring aspect. But there are two other ways that we can do it as well. The second one we can think of as occasional. So this would be the type of mentor where, you know, you have a question, or someone that you know is good at giving advice, and when you need some, you call them up or you get in touch with them. You know they have some knowledge that you don't have, and you can tap that when you need to. Guidance. And it typically is something that's only needed for a time. When you get your answer, your input, you work through your issue, you can move on. So a counselor is a good example of this. Someone's dealing with a difficult life situation, and they go to a counselor to help them work through it. They get to the other side and they are done. A teacher, how many of you are teachers, faculty members? So every time you step into your classroom, you are a teacher mentor to your students. You have them for a semester or a quad or however long. And it may or may not become a one-on-one type of relationship, but in a sense, you are functioning as a mentor. And I think that can be a pivotal understanding for some faculty members who don't necessarily think of their students that way. But that is what you're doing when you go into your class. Sponsor would be more in the industry realm. So a new person is new in their position and they connect with someone who's been there for a while to kind of learn the ropes and get familiar with things. And, you know, once they're established, they are kind of on their own. So the idea of occasional would be more of a seasonal, for a season of life type of mentor. And then the third type is passive. And we don't often think of passive mentoring, but this can be a very significant way of speaking into the lives of others. Two types of passive mentoring. A contemporary model would be someone who is living, you know, and that's the distinction here, contemporary, they're alive, historic, they're not. So someone who you can see, you can observe their life, you can learn from their life, you can be inspired by them, you can emulate them in a real way. So Billy Graham might be a good example for us in the room. Mother Teresa, even though she's not here anymore, for many of us for a long time, we could observe her life. But it doesn't have to be famous people. It could be your dad, or it could be your pastor, or it could be your faculty member. So the idea of role model kind of comes in here. And that doesn't necessarily require a personal relationship. And I guess that's where the passive element of this comes in. Others are observing, or you're observing someone else, and that is inspiring you and informing the way you live. The historical model is just that. It's people from history. You read a biography and you're inspired by that person's life, or you see a documentary or whatever. So some of the ways that mentors can incorporate these things, obviously, if you're a role model for someone, you just are. They're, you know, being aware of your own integrity is a significant component of that. We can all think of examples of role models who have fallen from grace and think about what that does to the people that they had been inspired by. But you can also, you can have a vibrant mentoring ministry and rarely sit down face to face with someone. And that sounds a little odd, but and it's not something we necessarily would want to do if we're interested in mentoring. But through books, videos, speakers, resources, and now in our age with all the technology we have, this is something that's much easier to do than it used to be. Connect your students or your mentees with the things that have inspired you. When I read a book that I get excited about, I buy 10 copies of it and stick it on my shelf. And when I'm sitting with a student or with someone and I'm talking and they're expressing the same kind of issues that this book helped me with, I just pull it out and I hand it to them and here you go. And I have two or three titles that I've done that with over the years. Pointing them to videos or helping them get to conferences. You asked about getting someone out of their context. Say, you really need to go to this because it will give you a different perspective and I'll go with you. That's a more intensive type of mentoring because it requires a little more of your time. But that's what that person is going to require, I think, to benefit from the mentoring relationship. So these types of mentors and these different ways that we mentor are the meat on the bones of the framework. And you can think about ways that those, if from that upward direction, have worked for you. You know, you've had coaches, you've had teachers, you've had counselors, and you've been those things. You can probably even think about the peer horizontal directions and how those have fed into those different types of mentoring. I used to have, in high school, I went into a counseling type field, and I think it goes back to in high school, my friends used to tell me that I was the one that they could come talk to. And whenever they talked to me, they cried. And so they obviously, there was some sort of something about what I provided for them that enabled them to be vulnerable. And I see that as having informed my decision to go into a counseling type role. So that was a peer kind of input. So questions or thoughts about these three types and kind of maybe how those have functioned for you? Here's just a word about role models. I like this quote from Rudyard Kipling: "No printed word nor spoken plea can teach young minds what they should be. Not all the books on all the shelves, but what the teachers are themselves." And I'm sure you can think of people who would fit that description for you. Yeah, thoughts? Yes.
I know I've used movies and books that way all my life because mm-hmm. I came from a very dysfunctional family, so I had no role models in mm-hmm. my mom and dad. Mm-hmm. So I used to be ashamed. I would watch the same movies and read the same books over mm-hmm. and over. And I finally, I think in my 50s, I accepted, I'm looking for role models, and mm-hmm. it's okay to find them. And you can't find them in reality. Mm-hmm. Get them in fiction or wherever.
Yeah.
You know, Remember the Titans or whatever.
Mm-hmm. A wonderful movie, and I've used a couple, and I didn't have time to do more clips. But you might, if you've seen Antoine Fisher, you might like that one. If you're thinking about people, it's about a young man who's in inner city and how he gets kind of taken out of his circumstances. That's a great mentoring movie. And the other one is, that's Antoine Fisher's about the Navy. Finding Forrester is mm-hmm. the one I'm thinking
yes.
of. Antoine Fisher's the one with Denzel Washington about the young man in the Navy with anger issues and how they impact each other, really.
The Finding Forrester movie has the same dilemma that you show there with Wesley Crusher and Star
yes.
Trek.
Yes, the
right.
plagiarism issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a real challenge.
Yep.
Aquila and the Bee is another.
Aquila and the Bee, yep.
The spelling.
Yep. You had a question?
Well, a comment, mm-hmm. I think, that most of my role models have been passive
mm-hmm.
In my life, you know,
yep.
how I decided things through books, through a lot
mm-hmm.
of fiction,
mm-hmm.
a whole lot of fiction, and because I didn't have any immediate either.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that passive models are really, really important
mm-hmm.
Because people are going to find role models wherever they can. But that, it seems to me that that is opening up a responsibility for me. As
mm-hmm.
a role model,
mm-hmm.
I must open my life to others so that they know about me, which means that I have a responsibility to get out there, to discuss, you know, who I am, my faith, my path,
mm-hmm.
and that's a bit challenging
mm-hmm.
because I tend to be more private.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm going to have the responsibility of being a good role model, I must take the responsibility of opening myself
mm-hmm.
to everybody so that I can become a passive role model.
Mm-hmm.
And it's passive, but that means that I must have a very intentional attitude to be a passive role model or something. So it's
that can be true. Yeah, I think you have your own particular strengths and expertise. So I would caution against thinking that you need to try to be all to anyone just as a role model. But it may also be an area where you yourself could benefit from a mentoring relationship that could help you get more comfortable with just presenting who you are. I think the passive idea is that you're living your life in a way that has integrity and others see that you're where you're being intentional about opening up more and being vulnerable more is more with those individuals that you end up mentoring on a more one-on-one or more intentional basis.
Don't you have to be open to not just the people that you're mentoring, but if you're going to be passive, people are going to need to find you who you don't know about.
I think you need to let that sort of organically happen in the way that you're living and who you're coming in contact with. It feels like a lot of pressure to put on yourself to make sure you're available to everyone in a way that they could access you.
Be willing to write something, you know,
sure,
with a personal aspect to it.
Yep.
Be willing to go out onto a speaking circuit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be willing to go out with people after your talk.
Yes.
And that kind of thing. So it requires that you have extra energy.
Yeah, that is true.
Input.
Yep,
into
that is true.
What you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe this is related to that. I was thinking on that passage. It's either a fourth category, it's a subcategory in our path, is what I call the accidental mentor.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when you say something to people and you don't think you're mentoring, you know, it's just a passage thing. And these meetings provide that kind of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us, I'm one of the old guys, right? So these meetings a long time, and now I'm experiencing people coming back to me saying, you remember back at, you may not remember me. I just had that experience yesterday.
I overheard that. It was outside the book table. Yeah.
It was a chilling kind of thing. I just you know, it just sends chills, you know. You know, God, that was that, those God moments where he just pushed them together and you say something, we have a conversation. And that was a wonderful, you know, affirmation of that. But
mm-hmm.
also, I think it's accidental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They call them divine appointments where I come from.
It is that there. It is we are. It's not about witnessing. It's not about mentoring. We are a mentor.
Right.
It's not. Mm-hmm. It's not now I'm mentoring and now I'm not.
Right.
My life is that open book. Right.
Right.
It's Moses teaching you. You do it when you get a prize in the morning and
right.
when you walk by the way.
Right.
This just flows out of your life.
Right. It's like that quote, you know, speak, share the gospel at all times, and when necessary, use
right.
words.
Yeah.
You know, sort of
right.
your mentor at all times, and when necessary, sit down and have a conversation, you know,
right.
that type of thing, where it is sort of a mindset in the way you're approaching the interactions you have throughout the day.
And it does give you a sense of responsibility. It is about being gifted and what's been given, and
mm-hmm.
whether you're going to share that or not.
Right.
This is why you said a little earlier with some faculty members pull back and say, oh, I can't possibly do that.
Right.
And I said, oh, that's really, you know, it's a shame.
Yeah.
Because you're really hurting yourself.
Right.
And you need to let that flow
mm-hmm.
out.
Right. Well, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that and how to think through that a little more in the third section. So you need a break, need to stretch, and yes.
My earlier question about levels.
Yes.
You had a great 15-minute answer.
Oh, in good.
Presentation.
Actually, let me flip back here to the earlier segment so that you can see what I was talking about with the framework.
I was also thinking that in part you probably already answered it.
This is the model, constellation model that I talked about earlier, where, you know, for the sake of this illustration, you're the center of the universe here, and we all need these different directions of mentoring relationships where we have the upward type, you know, the person who mentors us. And then we have the downward are those who we turn around and then mentor in turn. And then we have the internal and the external peer groups, which are kind of that horizontal level of mentoring relationships that speak into our development. But the internal beings, those people who are sort of in the same boat as we are, understand us and our context and our struggles. And then the external being those who can kind of be more objective about our issues and maybe speak in a truth or a perspective that we aren't able to see because we're immersed in our own struggles. So this is the framework, and then those three types of mentoring, intensive, occasional, passive, kind of fill out what these relationships look like in practice.
I like this. A few weeks ago, I heard about 360-degree leader,
mm-hmm.
same basic ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
how you interact with people below you in a hierarchy,
mm-hmm.
above and...
Yep. Yep.
I love you, Jean-Luc. Examples.
Yeah, he's...
He's one of my mentors, for sure.
Yep, yep, me too. So I think we start the last one at 11:15, is that right? If anyone needs a snack, I have some I had these for something else and we didn't use them, so if anybody is interested, we've got some nuts and coconut chips and trail mix and fruit.
Right. Is the next session, does it have anything to do with mission, as far as missions or anything? Is this near and far? And I'm just wondering what that...
No, it's mentoring relationships when you can sit down and have coffee together or when you're on opposite coasts of the country. So no, it's not a mission.
That's what I wondered about.
It would look different. This is all about mentoring within our own culture and our own context.
Yes.
Whereas when you go cross culture and cross context, there's a whole...
Well, that's what I feel like, even though the mentoring that I have experienced has been here in the United States, I feel like it has been another culture, because it depends on the depth of the dysfunction, because you can't just plant some mentoring, you can't just plant seeds or words of affirmation or just words of wisdom. You actually have to show them the light and bring them, you know, I have experience bringing kids into my home and letting them see just how we live and be there 3 days a week. You really don't do anything with them except allow them to exist in your world.
Right.
And I found it to be rewarding and heartbreaking too.
Yeah.
Because then they're sitting back home and they're still in that environment. And that's a struggle that I have.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and it's a different kind of mentoring.
Yes, it is. Very intense.
Yeah. Martin Price had some really interesting ideas about that. When you go into another culture, you should be mentored.
As well.
Mm-hmm. Observe how they do things. Mm-hmm. Ask how they do things. Learn from them. Empathy, understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Then you can figure out how to help them.
Yeah.
So mentoring really goes both ways.
It really
a
does.
Lot more.
Be teachable.
Sounds like you're saying there's a language of mentoring depending upon the
context.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it will look different. I think the constellation and the types are the same, but it will be framed by the context. And when you're dealing with a certain situation where you want students to be coming out of poverty or, you know, whatever it is they're dealing with, that requires a much more intensive
relationship. I don't think people, you know, you go into
it's
you know, start your education and think, well, I want to be a counselor.
Right.
And
right.
It's not enough, you know, it's not enough in that environment. It's deeper than that.
Yes.
You know, and you can't take on all.
Right. And in some contexts like that, it may need to be systemic. You know, it may need to be an effort of a community that is all working towards the same goal. And in that sense, the mentoring sort of informs what you're doing because it gives it a name, a function, but it's not something one person is going to be able to effectively do on their own. So it becomes more of the system that is put in place to enable that result to happen.
Sometimes you're wondering how that would compare to pastoring.
More. Maybe it's a lot like pastoring.
Shepherding,
yeah.
It seems like as a mentor, we might have a responsibility to recognize whether or not we can
when you go into
meet
a new culture,
the immediate need.
Mentor
and if we can't, then develop a community or a network.
This is
good.
Oh, good. Thank you for being here.
It helps you evaluate all your relationships and you start to see.
see them in all directions.
Right, right. So next we're going to talk about how to get these types of relationships in place. Like, how do you know how many students you should mentor? How do you know who you should ask to be your mentor? How do you know if you're the right person? And so the third aspect of what we're going to talk about is the practical, or the practice of mentoring and how it looks day to day. And this is a quote by Kevin Spacey, and we can argue about whether luck has anything to do with it, but it says, if you're lucky enough to do well, it's your responsibility to send the elevator back down. And, you know, in our context as Christians, we're seeing God's sovereignty in our process of development, and we're not necessarily saying, oh, aren't we lucky to be where we are? But the idea being that those of us who have traveled along, or, you know, if you see life as an image of going up an elevator, those of us who are higher up have a responsibility to send it back down so those who are below can come up too. And so I thought that was a helpful just way of framing this idea of what does it look like. So here's where we have to take a look at ourselves. And if you are on the mentoring side of it, so now we're all kind of looking at that constellation model with us in the middle. We're looking down. So as we look to mentor others, what are the questions that we should be asking ourselves so that when the opportunity presents itself to mentor someone else, are we doing it for the right reasons? Are we doing it from our strengths? Are we doing it in a way that will be most effective for the person that we are trying to mentor? So here are some questions we might want to ask. What is my expertise? And for most of us, that's a pretty easy one to answer. What are my strengths? And that one may not be as easily accessible. There are a lot of assessments you can do, things that will help you identify what your strengths are. There's one in particular that's called Strengths Finder that I would highly recommend. It's through the Gallup organization, and you purchase a code and you go online and take it, and then it opens this whole world of strengths to you. I've actually become a certified administrator of strengths, and I do workshops on helping people understand their strengths. And it's an important aspect of understanding who you are, because it helps you understand what you have to offer and how you can best offer it to others. What life experiences have shaped you? So we've all been through different types of experiences that may have been very difficult, but now equip us to help someone else go through the same thing. My parents divorced when I was a senior in high school. So a lot of my work with high school and college students, I have that point of reference now to say, you know, here I am at age 50 having been a child of divorce, and I have students whose parents are going through it at that moment. And that experience has uniquely equipped me to speak into that for them and help them navigate that experience. Death of a parent, illness, your own or someone you love. All of those things shape us and equip us to then help others through that similar experience. It does not mean that if you haven't experienced cancer that you can't help someone who is going through cancer. That's not what I'm trying to say. But there are ways that you uniquely can speak into that once you've been through something. What type of mentoring best suits you? Are you a really great coach? Are you a really great counselor? If you're a great coach, you may or may not be a great counselor. And if someone comes to you with a need that requires counseling, you're not going to do them any favors if you try to counsel them when you're not a good counselor. Or if you're, you know, town kids' soccer league needs a coach and you're not a good coach, don't sign up because there'll be a bad experience for everyone.
Is there an inventory to assess what type of mentor you would best be?
Oh, that's a good question.
Like your style or your...
I don't know that. I'll have to look into that. I would bet there is. With everything that's out there.
Sure.
I would Google, what's my mentoring style?
Oh, there you go.
You know, and you may find some different vocabulary from what we're talking about here, but you can, you know, parallel it. So understanding the type of mentor functionally that you are best suited to be will help you assess when a student comes to you whether you're the right person to mentor them. It will also help you identify students and, you know, think about that potential again, that student who sat there passively waiting for someone to see his potential. It will also help you identify those students where you might see that nugget of potential, and because it connects with the way that you naturally tend to mentor. And then that could be a relationship that you reach out and pursue. And then what current relationships have the potential for more intentional mentoring? As a faculty member, you've got those students that you tend to connect really naturally with, or in your workplace, you know, you may have another, a colleague who is earlier on in their career and you see a lot of yourself in them. That can be a really impactful way of starting a conversation. You know, I see a lot of myself in you, and I'd love at some point to talk about what my experience has been here, so that maybe you can learn from some of my mistakes and some of my experiences. So be thinking about how you can also reach out when you see the potential in others that connects with your way of mentoring and your strengths. Thoughts about this? Other ways that you've sort of identified yourself as a mentor, or how this has played out for you in some of the mentoring relationships you've had? Yeah.
You know, I think in order to understand ourselves, it would be good to take an inventory of events that we recognize we have been mentors.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
See where we have already made certain influences with mm-hmm. others, and see whether there is a pattern
yeah.
to that.
Yep.
And that may help you identify, you know,
yep.
what your strengths.
That's a great suggestion. Yeah. Yeah. Like John said earlier, you know, someone talked to him about a way they had been impacted by him, and he sort of was surprised by that. If you may have people who regularly tell you you're really good at something, you know, make note of that. You know, you're great when you talk about this topic, or when you play volleyball, or, you know, whatever it is. If you have different people repeatedly telling you that you're excellent at something, that's a clue that that's a real strength of yours. Any other ideas on this one? Yes.
Might be getting to this later, but as we think about, I guess, our role maybe as a spiritual mentor or something like that,
mm-hmm.
I hear a lot of people say that you don't know what, like, the fruit of your labor, or you don't have the same economy as God. So sometimes I feel like, well, we have all the ways to assess our impact in terms of earthly things or
mm-hmm.
whatever, natural ways, but, I mean, in terms of the actual impact, eternal impact, do you have any ideas?
Yeah, that's a hard one because it's very intangible. And oftentimes the way we mentor people is very early on in the process, and we're never going to see the end result. But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be speaking in to their life or their situation. Is that what you're getting at? Is how do we... kind of.
Maybe the analogy helps, that Jesus talked about, or Paul said, some plant a seed, some water,
yeah.
and some harvest.
Mm-hmm.
You never know whether you're planting any water or your harvest. And God doesn't let us see our fruit lots of times because we'd get puffed up or it wouldn't be
right.
useful.
Right.
So it's hidden.
But that can be difficult, especially if you're sitting with a person who's in a very dark place or difficult place and you don't necessarily see them come out of it. I had a student once who had been a resident advisor for me. He was, you know, a musician, you know, very into, you know, leading worship. He would compose worship music. Very strong believer, who a year or two later came back and told me he didn't believe in God anymore. And he was just in a really hard place. And I remember sitting with him and saying, you will never be out of God's hand. You know, whether you feel like you're in it or not, you know, his life was a testimony to salvation in Christ. And I had to believe that that wasn't gone, even though he wasn't feeling it at the moment. And to be able to be in one in that moment with that person and speak into it in a way that I may have never learned whether God brought him through that time or not. Fortunately, I've seen that, and he has. But you can't be afraid of speaking the truth into someone's life, even though you may not ever see the result you would like to see. But that's where we have to have an element of trust and know that God is sovereign over it. Even if we mess up and I said the wrong thing to him in that moment, God was still sovereign over his life and his process of growth and his spiritual journey. So, any other thoughts? Yes.
Question. So, in looking at the slide and take a look at yourself, one of the things that I've thought about is possibly getting involved in mentoring in different areas. And part of when I look at myself, I say, you know, my family consumes a lot of my time. I work in industry, so I work 40 hours a week doing that. There's all these different possibilities of things that have come up where I could potentially mentor or do things. But it's how do you keep from feeling overwhelmed and kind of pick, like, strategically what you're going to do? Because there's different ways, for instance, that it sounds like of late that people have identified places I could be involved at church. There's startup technology type incubators around where I live that they're looking for people to mentor, people that are starting businesses, things like that. And so I just kind of look at all that and say, well, you know, how do I even prioritize? Or
well, I think that's where really thinking about what your strengths and what type of mentor you're best suited to be could be helpful. I mean, if you're suited to be a spiritual guide, then focus maybe on getting involved in something through your church where there's more of a spiritual focus. If you're really good at coaching or sponsoring and kind of the industry way of, you know, teaching someone the industry and the field, get involved with the startup. But do it, you know, seeking God's guidance and, you know, try to discern where he would have you serve. But really understanding your strengths and what you're best suited to do. Because if you're not suited to be in a spiritual guidance sort of role, don't try to do that, because that'll just wear you out.
Well, my problem too is that I feel like I always have a foot in two different realms. Like my bachelor's is in biblical studies. I was focusing on doing ministry, then my master's is in software engineering. And so I end up feeling like I'm always torn between all these different activities that could be in. And it's just trying to figure out, well, you know, how do you balance all that with family?
Well, and maybe because of where you're at in your family and that stage of life, you focus on the more occasional type mentoring things, teaching a class or, you know, doing a weekend workshop or things that are less time consuming.
I think just to encourage you, when you have a lot of strengths, you do feel overwhelmed. I was weeping once because I was telling him I didn't want to miss his will, and he showed me a picture of this concrete trough to his throne, like you put under downspouts. And he said, "Grace, you can't miss my will. even if you tried, you're not that big and powerful. And you know, when you hear a picture that speaks to you, you just take it. It's yours, you know.
Yeah.
But he wants to take anxiety. You know, I was just too. I didn't have a big enough picture of God's sovereignty over. Because we all want to be fruitful. We all want to maximize fruit. I mean, Jesus said that's what we're here for, is that
right.
You would bear fruit and it would remain.
Right.
So, you know, that's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's think about those who are being mentored. And this applies to all of us, if we're all sensitive to that upward focus in our constellation where we're receiving the mentoring. Thinking about where we need to grow. What are the areas where our own personal growth can be furthered? Where could we use some help or support? This may be particularly relevant to a graduate student or a postdoc student who is starting their career and could use some guidance about where to look or what to do next. What types of mentoring best suit our various needs? And this is where we get into the idea that the gentleman over here was talking about, where the constellation is multiple mentors versus the different directions of mentoring. And you don't need to find someone who can meet all of your needs in one relationship. You can have a series or even, you know, a number of relationships at the same time. But each is speaking into a different need that you have. Some may be occasional in that, you know, you get together to talk about something you need advice on, while something else is more intensive where you're working through a specific issue or having a more long term. But to think about your needs in terms of what type of mentoring will best meet that need. And then thinking about who do you think can help you. So I tell this to students all the time. You know, you might see somebody that you think, oh, I would like that person to be my mentor. Well, next you need to think about why you think that person should be your mentor. And so there is some work that you need to do before you actually approach someone to say, I would like you to mentor me. Any other ideas or thoughts about identifying for yourself as someone who needs to be mentored, types of questions you can ask.
I'm just thinking you can flip this around. If someone comes and says, I want you to mentor me, you could ask them these questions as a way to get started and see how focused are they and can they give you clues.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
You know, that particularly helps when I think about being a mentor comes with power. And you can abuse that power and feel powerful because you have control over somebody else's life.
Right.
And not even realize it.
Right.
But if you take these questions and say, don't rely just on me, go out and find others, it helps to keep you in a position of humility so that you don't try to become everything to that person.
Right.
Stay away from
I would tend to show them that 360, the four directions, and say, look, you've got peers that are inside, outside, you've got people, following.
Well, and that is, what is the next step? And how do you actually initiate some type of mentoring relationship? And instead of going up to someone and say, will you be my mentor? I tell students that is not the question that you want to ask someone. And it came out yesterday in the panel. You know, I think Randy Isaac said, if a young person comes up and says, will you be my mentor? He says, I cringe because I don't know what they mean by that. And so I recommend that instead of saying that to someone, they start by just getting together, if possible, have coffee or tea or smoothie or whatever it is you like to drink. And just start to get to know them. And Randy even said this yesterday, if someone just asks if they can have coffee and get to know me a little, I'm always okay with that. And even though people are busy, most people are willing to sit down and have a conversation. asking questions about the organization or the school or the position, or just think of very non-vulnerable types of things you can use to get to know each other. Ask someone to help you learn the ropes of an organization or a company. Request an interview. This is something that is kind of fun to do. People love to talk about themselves. And so even if you just say, could I have 15 minutes of your time, I'd like to just do an informal interview about what you do and what you love about what you do. That can give you a lot of insight into what their strengths are and what their passions are. And then ask for influential books. Ask them, what are the books that you've read that have inspired you? And go read them. And if they inspire you too, then it's probably a good indication that a relationship with that person will be very beneficial to you. So a little bit of work before you are talking about formalizing some kind of mentoring relationship. And then after establishing that connection, expressing what it is you've observed about that person that has inspired you or that you admire. So instead of walking up to someone, hopefully after you've met them and you know them a little bit, and saying, would you be my mentor? Because even after you know somebody better, that question can still cause them to cringe because they don't really know what you mean by it. Saying to them, here's what I've admired about you, or here's what I've observed about you that I would like to learn more about or I'm curious about. And or even saying, and here's a need that I've identified that I have, and this is why I think you could help me with that. So you're actually telling them why you think they would be a good mentor to you, what it is you need from them, and why you think they're the one to meet that need. And that gives them the opportunity to say, you're way off base, that's not what I can do at all, or that makes a lot of sense and I would love to talk with you more about that. Or maybe, I'm so glad you brought that need to me and I see that's a really important thing. I'm not able right now to meet that need for you, but I know someone who maybe could. Or let me connect you to a resource to help you look further into that, even though I can't do that for you right now. Doesn't mean that you couldn't if you had time or you didn't have other things going on, but it gives a much better framework for establishing a relationship that will be very defined and helpful. And I would also suggest if you do decide to, you know, continue the relationship, and it is in a more intensive or intentional kind of way, say, you know, and let's sit down 3 months from now and kind of reevaluate and see if this is really being helpful to you. Because when you leave it more open-ended, you can get into a situation where you're both kind of like, I don't really think this is working, and but I don't want to hurt their feelings. And, you know, you do get to know each other, so you start to care about each other. So build into it this sort of natural stopping point where you say, you know, let's talk about how it's going. And we may find that in 3 months, we're ready to move on and you know, just keep in touch. And that way you give yourself kind of a natural out if you don't feel like it's working. And in 3 months you can say, yeah, this has been great, let's keep going for another 3 months, and put another stopping point on it so that you avoid the open-endedness of having to, you know, break up at some point where it could be hurtful. So,
can I give two examples?
Of course.
I work in inner healing ministry in my church, and mm-hmm. when newcomers come in, they get a buddy. So I buddied with this woman. She found out I was writing my first book, and she said, oh, you're going to need a mentor. And she volunteered her time, and two of the good things she did for me was she said, you're going to have to join Toastmasters to improve your public speaking. You're going to have to join the National Association of Mental Illness. Go and take their 12-week class. So she helped me, but she also directed me out. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to know the three books that you most recommend or give away.
Oh, boy. Some of them I haven't for a while, but one of them is The Alchemist. The other is... Some of them were specific to the context I was working in at the time. Well, the Sharon Parks book, The Critical Years, it's called, and she's the one who I mentioned earlier kind of defined this adolescent to adulthood stage of development as being young adulthood. What is the one that's there now? I'm blanking out on it.
That's okay. Thanks.
I'll see if I can get it back in my memory and let you know. Yes?
You know, when I look at this, I can see that there's a very definite time and place for mm-hmm. this kind of a formal mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
But I would actually be fairly uncomfortable with establishing a relationship that is clearly identified as a mentoring relationship after only, you know, a brief meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I recognize that I'm a mentor to a lot of different people,
mm-hmm.
But I would tend to develop along the path of a goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so have a well-defined goal, work with that person through the goal. So this is like the occasional model.
Yes. Yep.
But then as you work with the person and you develop relationship, you understand, okay, where are the places that are appropriate and where are they dangerous to
mm-hmm.
go into
mm-hmm.
with that person.
Yep.
And so I guess I use the situation in order to establish the connection and the boundary
mm-hmm.
of what a possible mentoring situation might be, and then just let it evolve
mm-hmm.
from there. So opening myself up to situations and collaborations and goals, working
mm-hmm.
with other people.
Yep.
Bring me into a mentorship relationship much more often than
mm-hmm.
this kind of thing.
And that's completely appropriate. Yeah. And that most of the mentoring relationships you'll have will naturally evolve out of the relationships that you have. And they may or may not ever require a conversation like this. But for those who do have people approach them in a way that is a lot more kind of, I want you to be my mentor, this can help kind of facilitate that
yes.
conversation.
The only time that's ever happened to me, I said, no.
Well, exactly.
No, that's just it.
Right.
You know,
so,
I'm not going
to
do that.
But it's unlikely that someone would come and ask that question without having some prior interaction with you, which is why this step is getting that prior interaction so that there's some sense that you can be helpful to them before they even come and talk to you about it.
Just an observation here,
yeah.
too. On that slide you just had up about, that was really good, and something that I would probably make sure to tell people that talk to me about things is, you know, how to appropriately ask people. Because I think I've learned the most from people that I would consider mentors just by these informal types of things that happen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Just as a personal testimony, the first meeting of the ASA that I ever went to was a Boston chapter meeting. And just living in Connecticut, I'm 2 hours away, and I love going to them, but I have to make sure I leave early enough that if traffic's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I did that, I got there an hour early, and it just so happened that Randy and Jack Haas got there at the same time. And he's like, hey, we know this place right around the corner. We had coffee and pastries and stuff.
Yeah.
So before the meeting, I got to meet some people, and, you know, I mean, it really worked well in a way that was just very informal, and it wasn't like, oh, hey, Randy, can you mentor me? It happened that
right.
way, that we were able to just talk informally at first. And
right.
It was a really
yeah.
good experience.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what we want. We want to see the mentoring, as we can identify it, happen in a way that's very organic and natural to the relationships and the interactions we're having. And that's why that quote at the very beginning about it being a shoulder to, I can't remember.
Shoulder
cause
crown.
The kick in the pants
the
is the one I think.
And the first one pick.
Yeah. An ear to listen, a shoulder, yeah. That's very informal, and that's just how we interact with each other in life. And you go to a meeting and you connect with people, and it starts something that becomes influential to you. But having these more formal concepts of it help us to understand what's happening, to understand that there is a function of mentoring that can be very purposeful and very effective in a way that helps us as the ones who are mentoring kind of have that mindset of this is what I am capable of doing, and therefore I want to live in a way that I'm open to those types of relationships. And then those who are looking for the mentoring input into their lives to understand how to go about getting that, so they're not like my young friend at the end of his 4 years of college sitting there saying, woe is me, I'm you know, so disappointed, when it was all right in front of him and he could have understood how to access it. So a couple of suggestions, and I know you've heard about this already. Nexus is our online forum that ASA started, and really Nexus came out of my conversations with Vicky a couple of years ago. Vicky and I went to college together. We've known each other for a long time, and our children grew up together. We used to teach our little ones preschool together, homeschool kind of thing. And she knew that when I worked at Gordon, I started a mentoring program called Companions for the Journey. And it was one that we paired up faculty and staff with students in one-on-one mentoring. And we created a book that was a series of questions and topics that were sort of a guided conversation for these mentoring relationships. Because it can be intimidating to sit down, you know, say, yes, I would like a mentor, and then you get paired up with someone you don't know, and then you get together, and what do you talk about? So we sort of created this, you know, very easy, light conversation starters to the more in-depth ones. As the relationship developed, you could talk about those more vulnerable things. And that was literally 20-plus years ago, and I didn't realize it until I took my daughter for a Accepted Students Day, and they talked about Companions for the Journey, and it was still going on. And the dean of chapel at the time was someone who knew I had been part of starting it, and he spotted me in the audience, and he was like, "Wait, you started this?" So I was, and since then I've reconnected, and I've become a mentor in the program.
Is it published?
No, but I have it electronically. I'd be happy to share with you.
Because we all wish this for our churches.
Yeah,
you know, this is discipleship.
Yep.
Just defined, and
yep.
Someone called a counselor a paid friend.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's so pathetic when the body of
yeah.
Christ doesn't have unpaid friends.
Right, right.
Everybody
yep.
does this for each other.
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to share that with you.
Thank you.
So Vicky actually has been a mentor in Companions for the Journey as well through Gordon, and so we got talking about ASA and how there was a desire to connect the members, but we had this obstacle of no one is in the same place. Everyone's all over the country. And so we started thinking about how could we access that type of connection in a way that was not, it didn't require you to be in the same room or in the same coffee shop. And so Nexus is the result of that. And the idea of guided conversation and putting out topics and questions and things around which people can relate is now migrated to Facebook, and so I'm hoping that it will be much more accessible to people, and we'll get a lot of good conversation going on there. And if you were at the State of the ASA last night, I had everyone take out their phone and join the Facebook group, and by the time I went to sleep, I had 66
Ooh,
members,
wow.
So I was very excited. Another way that you can engage in these types of conversations is through the Emerging Scholars Network. And they have a blog where I actually linked a post of theirs on Nexus yesterday about internships and how they can benefit early career. But they have a lot of resources that fit under this mentoring type of connection. So I would just recommend that you check out their blog, and you can, this is just a screenshot, so it's not complete, but it's through InterVarsity, and I'd encourage you to go meet Tom Grosch. He's out at the InterVarsity table in the exhibit hall, and they just have a huge amount of resources. So just a couple that I want to mention. I'm really excited about Nexus and even the connections at the conference this weekend have been great, and I'm hoping we'll get some really good conversation, and the relationships that people have started here or reconnected here can continue in conversation on Nexus. So thank you for sticking with me for the morning. Thank you so much. I was very, very happy to be able to talk about this because I love it. And my email is right up here if you would like, and I think it's in your program as well. So if I told you I would send you something and I forget, just send me an email and I will get it right to you. So hope you have a safe trip home. It's been delightful to meet you all.